In this episode of Movie Wars, we're going to review Gravity, Prisoners, and Rush. Time for Movie Wallets. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallets is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hello.
We're back after a little bit of a hiatus.
We barely recognise
And travels.
I know, we barely recognise each other.
I know.
It's been so long.
It was, I think, like...
3 weeks.
Yeah, September.
Yeah.
When we last recorded.
I think so.
And it's now almost the end of October.
Yeah. So let's get going.
Indeed. Why have we been so busy?
We've been travelling and it's
all of us.
Well, my dad came to visit.
Yeah. Then. Yes.
And work conspired for you.
Yes, I was travelling for work.
Amsterdam, New York, London.
Yes, sounds very glamorous. It wasn't. It was nice.
And Yati, where did you go?
Vacation.
I took a very indulgent vacation to Turkey and the Greek islands. Oh.
Why was it indulgent?
I don't just take off for Europe on a whim, and I did.
Well, no, but vacations are supposed to be indulgent.
I know.
They're your you time.
Looked amazing.
Yeah.
I want to see the rest of them.
Yeah.
Did you take thousands of pictures?
I did.
And where was your favourite place?
I think it would have to be a tie between Istanbul and Santorini.
Wow. So
Istanbul in Turkey and then Santorini. And
where's Santorini?
Greece.
It's one of the Greek islands. And there's this village on top of the island called Ia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that iconic, you know, whitewashed homes with the blue domes of all the churches. And there's a church, like every fifth home is a
Greek
church.
Greek
Orthodox church.
And blue ocean.
It's right off of the ocean. And it's easily one of the prettiest.
It's where the Kardashians went, Joe.
Oh.
Don't pretend you don't know that you don't watch that
that's
show.
Right, my favourite show. Episode 43, wasn't it?
And Brangelina have a home there.
As
do many other celebrities, yes.
Wow, so it's pricey then.
It's super pricey. And the actual town itself is all these narrow cobbled streets through which only 3 people at a time can go.
So it gets, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy right now. I can only imagine how it is in summer. It just gets all blocked up with tourists.
Wow.
But it's special.
Very nice. Good food?
Excellent food, yes. Excellent food.
Not like you would get in space.
Segue. Okay. Let's go to space then. Gravity, our first review. Who's introing? Rashmi.
So a medical engineer and an astronaut work together to survive after an accident leaves them adrift in space. This is directed by Alfonso Cuarón and written by Alfonso Cuarón, Jonas Cuarón and George Clooney, who's actually listed as uncredited, but he did have screenplay review, apparently.
Is that how to pronounce the name, by the way?
I don't know. Cuarón? Yeah,
they're from Mexico. I don't know how you... Cuarón is how I say it.
Cuarón.
C-U-A-R with an, and then an O with a thingy on it. N. All right. Anyway, sorry. Just had to add that.
So this stars Sandra Bullock, George Clooney and Ed Harris and, of course, many others. So, yes, you have a plethora of notes. Compared to my 4 lines. So why don't you go?
Typed.
Why don't
typed,
you go?
Not
first?
Handwritten, typed. So you have a lot to say.
Go, Yazdi.
Okay, so I have just one sentence to sum it all up, which is I think the film is all kinds of amazement. Alfonso Cuarón, who I really admire, he's made the Harry Potter movies, he's done Children of Men, and he's also done Great Expectations, and originally he did Y Tu Mamá También, which was an amazing movie. But anyway, Alfonso Cuarón always wanted to be an astronaut, long before he became a filmmaker.
Oh.
And in this movie, he gets to finally blend his two big passions in life, which is cinema and astronomy, to stellar results, I think. So, I like this movie.
Joe.
A lot.
Oh.
Yeah, I thought this was brilliant. This was not a plot-heavy movie. In fact, I think I was a little disappointed in the fact that there wasn't a lot of story here, but I think I was too busy being breathlessly excited and pinned to my seat with all of the shenanigans that were going on in Zero Gravity. I mean, gravity is not really what this movie is about. It's almost, it's about there being no gravity. So, just what a fantastic movie-going experience. It's a must-see in 3D, don't bother if you can't see it in 3D almost. I mean, I can't imagine it would be a worse film. It's just the experience of 3D was among the best I've ever seen.
So I think this is one of the best films I've seen with respect to recreating what it must be like to be in space. I think it had great cinematography and editing. However, the story was completely lacking for me, and I just couldn't connect to any of the characters.
Oh, really?
So good film, I think visually, like you said, Joe, I mean, it's an absolute experience, but in terms of story or something you could follow along, I just couldn't.
So two things. One is, Joe, you said it's brilliant, and I think the movie is brilliant, and I think any person would have to be stupid to say that it's anything other than brilliant, and you did acknowledge, and that's not meant to dig at you. No, this is in my notes. This is in my notes before you said anything.
He's totally dug into you.
That's
probably the meanest thing I've ever heard a movie. No, I'm kidding.
No, but I think the question is it this, just even looking at the technical parts, I mean, I think this hermetically sealed environment that the movie has, I mean, the movie pretty much through its entirety is in space, and that it very, very credibly creates this whole other environment speaks to, you know, how technically accomplished it is. I mean, I never once doubted that they were truly in space.
Correct. I agree.
And I think a lot of people who've had some concerns with the movie have to do with the story aspect. Mm-hmm. And I agree that, you know, people can... The reviews of the movie coming out of the film festivals were so stratospheric, if pardon my pun, but they were so out of the world that everybody expected, like, 2001 A Space Odyssey. Everybody expected some very complex, very involved story. And actually, the story is remarkably simple. It's so straightforward that you could almost, that the setting almost becomes irrelevant. This movie need not even have been in space. It could have been about somebody lost, you know, on the Antarctic. It could have been somebody lost in the desert.
So that's a good point, Yasdi, because really then it reminded me of Buried. Right, yeah. Remember that great movie we saw with Ryan Reynolds, where he's literally buried in a coffin? It really reminded me of that. And in fact, I had that same claustrophobia, even though this is space.
I got more of an open water vibe.
Like,
I
mean, an agoraphobia.
I haven't seen open water, but this very much felt like open water in space, where, you know, somebody is basically stranded with very little way to get back to
civilization. But that's the premise, isn't it? It's basically someone...
This isn't a plotty movie. Yeah. I don't think it pretends to be, and I don't think it would have been better if it had been. Because it was more like a fairground ride in some ways. I felt like I spent an hour and a half in Earth's orbit. You know, that was the experience I came away with. And, you know, yes, there were things that happened during the movie which added lots of tension to the experience, but I really felt like I was up there with them.
But then it could be a ride at Epcot Center.
What I just said. It felt like that. It felt like that.
I mean, a lot of reviews have said it is Castaway in space, and I hadn't thought about it, but that kind of makes sense. You know, Castaway was a similar story about, you know, a person who has to kind of find his way and wonder if
Wilson.
He's...
Wilson!
Right.
Sorry.
But I think, you know, I actually found, you know, a fair degree of emotional heft to it. Now, I should come out and say that this was, bar none, the single most anticipated movie of the year for me. Wow. Starting in February of this year.
Really?
I mean, with that cast and with that, and you know, I love sci-fi and all of this stuff. So I had very, very high expectations, and I think no movie could have met those high expectations. So it was a bit of a disappointment for me. But even then, I really liked that the movie kind of got into this space that very few movies do, which is the space of, you know, this final gasp situation where, you know, when a person is so pushed into despair and is so close to certain death that they get into the state of delirium, you know, like, here I am and I'm going to die anyway, so let me enjoy this crazy fight instead of giving up and crumbling to the floor. And, you know, this might be a bit of a giveaway, bit of a spoiler, but I really liked that this movie summoned that in one particular part towards the end where, you know, she's so certain to die and she gets so depressed. And then she says, you know, F it. I'm just going to fight this and I'm going to do what I can. And that kind of gave me goosebumps.
And I think it would have given me goosebumps, except by that stage, there had been so much adversity and so many challenges. I was like, really? Another one? How long before this woman is saved? Because inevitably, I know she's going to be saved because it's Sandra Bullock. So I think it took away... that goosebump feeling, and I kind of got tired and fatigued by it all by the end of it.
There was the kind of Temple of Doom syndrome where, you know, there's a tight spot and there's almost no possible way forward, and then...
Oh, I'll use the chewing gum behind my ear and that will get me out of the situation. That's how it felt.
Well, no, that it didn't kind of come out of anywhere. I think it was very cleverly done. The writers... You know, the writers avoided using that kind of, you know, Deus Ex Machina thing where, right, you know, God suddenly intervenes and something that wasn't present or possibility,
right,
comes in. Because that's why movies get annoying for me. But there were a lot of kind of, you know, this is it, game over, there's no solution, and then something presents itself as the way out. So I did get a little fatigued with the,
really,
kind of almost dead, but not quite, and carry on.
Oh, again!
Yeah, but yeah. I didn't... Obviously, find that as offensive as you did, Rashmi.
Yes, the final words.
Because it didn't bother me. It didn't bother me until we spoke.
I at no point had the conclusion of the movie figured out.
Oh, really? No. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there are parts where it gets pretty dark, you know, in terms of the despair, and I thought that any outcome in the movie is just as possible. So for me, it was pretty compelling all the way through. And, you know, because it didn't quite meet my stratospheric expectations, I was worried that my experience the first time was colored by my expectations. And so I actually went back and on my own dime saw it again.
Wow.
And
what was it like the second time around?
It was just as compelling, even when I knew what the outcome was. Hmm. And there were a lot of things I hadn't picked up on the first time that, you know, I picked up the second time. I mean, there's been a lot, you know, this movie has done a tremendous business. You know, a lot of people are very strong, you know, defenders of the movie. And there's been a lot of things written about it. And, you know, one of the things that everybody talks about is that amazing first shot in the movie.
Yes.
You know, where I pretty much, you know, I was conscious, okay, this is the same single shot that the movie started with, and it's going and it's going and it's 5 minutes and it's 10 minutes. And after a while, I just gave up. I gave up trying to figure out if this shot has broken or not. So did they have to do that? No, but there's something very operatic and, you know, it's virtuotic.
It's stunning to look at.
There's a grandness to the whole movie.
I agree.
Yeah, it almost plays out in real time. I mean, mm-hmm. That's the thing. It's kind of 90 minutes in space. You know, it's a very short movie.
Yeah.
But it does have that sense of being there. And I think, you know, the kind of the usual thing that we see in movies with edits and time passing didn't happen. It felt just one long ride from start to finish.
Okay. Score and end summary. Yazdi.
So I think for me, the movie finally... ultimately has that Homer's Odyssey quality, you know, of a single person trying to survive. And, you know, I think that has that primal charge that most audience members are, you know, identifying with. It worked for me. And the only reason I'm not giving it a 9 out of 10 was because it did not meet my huge expectations. It's a very good 8.5 out of 10. But because Joe is going to growl and moan, I'm going to back it down to 8 out of 10. And 8 seems horribly, horribly unfair to it. But I won't give it a 9.
Joe?
Just a marvellous 3D spectacle. It's really one of the few justifications I've seen for the use of 3D in the movie theatres. This is an experience that you can't get at home. This is a movie that you have to see in the cinema. And I would really recommend that you do go and see this in the cinema. So I loved it. I think it was everything that I wanted it to be. A little thin on plot, but... it didn't detract for me. It was more about being there, and I felt like I spent 90 minutes in space. A little stingy as well with the 8 out of 10, only because there wasn't more meat to the movie. But a very, very solid 8 out of 10 and a super strong recommendation.
So for me, this was like a supermodel. So good to look at, but really empty inside. So I'm going to say even George Clooney couldn't save this one for me. Thank God it's short. But it's really, really good to look at. So I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10.
Wow. Okay. This movie has had, like, enormous praise everywhere. It's unanimous. 97% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
That's unheard of.
I mean, there are people who are not... I think the problem is, you know, this came with so much fanfare. It came with so much fanfare. You know, everybody was expecting, and with that cast, you know,
I know, that's my thing with George Clooney and Sandra Bullock.
Had it been more plotty, though, I think it would have gotten complicated.
Yeah,
you know, there was enough backstory for each of the characters to understand their motivations, and you know, the performances were good too.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about this for a while, but there's been a lot of criticism about the fact that the Sandra Bullock character is kind of, you know, burdened with this backstory, which is unnecessary.
It's so dull.
Well, that for me was the heart of the story. You know, that
which doesn't say a lot, right? You've got a whole movie on a premise that's a backstory. Doesn't make sense.
Well, the backstory adds a reason for her to live.
Yeah.
Right.
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 And it's a little mechanical in that.
And a lot of people thought that was a little contrived. I didn't, but yeah, a lot of people. I bet you did as well.
Yeah.
Sandra Bullock, Best Actor nominations.
Oh, please, no.
I think there's very strong buzz about it.
I think it's going to be. I think she will, because it's Sandra Bullock again, but...
It's a performance that I can't fault in any which way.
Yeah, I can't fault it.
She was terrific in this, and I felt everything that she was going through.
But I did read something funny that did make me smile, which is, considering she's in Zero Gravity, her hair didn't stand on end. But she did have perfect hair and perfect makeup.
I heard this as well, but she has short hair in the movie. I mean, if you have short hair, does it stand up? Would my hair stand up?
Joe's wouldn't. Yours and mine would.
No.
Yassi.
You're criticizing her for that.
No, I'm just saying it made me laugh. Anyway.
Yeah, All right, well,
let's rush to the next one.
Back to Earth.
Oh, never mind.
I
actually saw the title Gravity as not being about gravity. I thought of gravity as in graveness. It's a movie about, you know, the gravity of life, how serious life is.
Oh.
Anyway.
Yeah, and I read it as the gravity of the situation, like what a dangerous situation.
Yeah.
Oh, I was taking it very literally in my usual way. The Earth has it and space doesn't.
I think that is the intent. Yes, I think that is the intent.
Oh, poetic Joe work again.
Okay.
All right, are we going to Rush?
We are Prisoners? Rush.
Okay.
And I have the intro again.
Why don't you intro Rush for us?
So a recreation of the merciless 1970s rivalry between Formula One rivals James Hunt and Niki Lauda. This is directed by the great Ron Howard and written by Peter Morgan. And it stars Daniel Brühl, Chris Hemsworth and Olivia Wilde. And the question I have for you is this a rush out to sea or a rush out of the theatre? And how does Thor fare as a racing car driver? And Joe, this one's, I'm thinking you're going to love this one. I'm just making a prediction before we go into it, because I didn't get to watch this one. But this is right up your street, Joe. This is like Formula One racing, 1970s rivalry.
Yeah.
Olivia Wilde's in it.
It's just before we let Yassi talk. I mean, this movie came very much from the kind of the great sporting rivalries. This is up James Hunt versus Niki Lauda was one of the, you know, the great stories of two sportsmen who really were competing for the top of their game, like Borg and McEnroe or one of those kind of things. So this was a season that I knew a fair amount before the movie, and I reminded myself about a lot of that stuff before going to see it, because there's a ton of great documentaries on this particular season, often thought of as the greatest season ever in Formula One, in terms of how close the rivalry was between these two drivers, all of the drama that happened. There were disqualifications.
More than the Schumacher days?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there were disqualifications. There were accusations of cheating. There was, you know, death-defying. There was so much in this season. The movie didn't actually get to all of it, but there was a lot of drama. Often thought of, really, honestly, as like the glory days of Formula One. So
Yazdi, did you like really it as much? Because I know Joe was, probably itching to see it.
So I should come out and say that I had no knowledge of John Hunt or Niki Lauda before I saw this film, and I do not have much interest in Formula One or any other type of automobile racing. But here's my thing. When you have a story this good, everything else about the movie becomes irrelevant. You know, the best a filmmaker can do is just get out of the way of telling the story when the story is this good. And that is exactly what Ron Howard does. He avoids drawing attention to himself by doing anything particularly showy in terms of, you know, fussy camera movements or crazy shots. And, you know, the CGI is not overdone. And in fact, the first half of the movie almost plays like a documentary, I think. And, you know, but I think this obvious lack of showiness should not be mistaken for ineptness, because you know, I think this movie is constructed amazingly well, that you almost forget the craft which is underneath it because it plays so well.
Oh, nice. Okay. Joe, I'm dying to hear what you think about
it. And therein lies my slight disappointment with the movie, in that they could have been they could have been jockeys, they could have been tennis players, they could have been athletic sprinters. This movie was not about Formula One. It was used very much as a backdrop for what were two very, very good, I thought, character studies. And I think part of the drama between these two drivers were just exactly how opposite they were as personalities. You know, James Hunt was the classic archetype playboy British racing driver. He just had this crazy way about him, and basically the fact that he was any good at Formula One was the fact that he was just purely talented, whereas Niki Lauda was very calculated. He worked at it. He really wanted to be good. He was very precise and technical. So that was the most interesting part of the story. And Ron Howard focused on that in this movie, and they did a really good job, I think, of getting the portrayal of these two men across, the rivalry between them. But it wasn't enough about Formula One for me as a Formula One fan.
Right.
I would have liked to see a little bit more motorsport in the movie, but that didn't detract from my entertainment at all. I thought this movie was terrific, and I would recommend it to everyone.
Oh, would you come and see it with me again?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, good.
Totally. It was brilliant.
Yeah, and I think actually they're marketing this movie all wrong, and I'm really sad to see that the movie did not pick up as much as I would have thought based on, what high caliber, high quality work it is. And I think because they marketed it essentially as a Formula One movie, and I don't think people in the US know much about Formula One. And I think they should have just sold it as this very human story about two competing people who almost have this love-hate relationship. I mean, they are so intensely driven and annoyed by their crazy competitiveness, but there's also some underlying respect for each other, and it's such a great, that whole dynamic between the two is so compelling.
Yeah. Well, they made each other better, and I think that correct. That, they had completely opposing styles, but the reason for one to get out of bed in the morning, it was to be better than the other person,
right?
And that was the case for both of them, Batman and the Joker, they kind of needed each other. They're these
well, the Borg
opposites.
McEnroe, we watched a really good documentary on Borg and McEnroe, which basically said that once Borg stopped playing, it kind of made McEnroe lose his drive because there wasn't anyone good enough to be competitive against. I guess I know a lot about Formula One just because Joe does, and he used to make me watch the races, and being a good partner, I did. But I must say, I wasn't unhappy when I knew that I was going to miss this one because I was going to be traveling, because you're right, Yazdi, it didn't appeal to me. And Chris Hemsworth as, in the 70s with that weird wig. I don't know. I just wasn't unhappy, but I guess you're saying it's a one worth seeing.
I actually commend the casting in this movie. I mean,
really?
Because I think it must have been very tempting for them to go with big name actors, to play the two main leads. And I think ultimately, I could be wrong, I haven't read up about it, but I think ultimately what they went with was physical similarities. I mean, at the end of the movie, they have photographs of the real guys, and it's remarkable. I mean, just mind-blowingly remarkable how similar each of them looks. And I think by pursuing actors based on their physical similarity, Ron Howard actually went about giving both of these actors roles of a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
especially Daniel Brühl, who we haven't seen so much of. My God, he's good in this movie. I mean, he's so compelling. He's so much a victim of the person he is. He can't, even as he knows how self-destructive he is, he cannot help being self-destructive. And you can say exactly the same thing for, the John Hunt character. And Chris Hemsworth is as good as I've ever seen him. I mean, I think these are really award-caliber performances.
Really?
If it was up to me, I would nominate both of those in a heartbeat.
Wow. And Olivia Wilde?
Bit part.
Okay.
Joe is still thinking, was she in the movie?
Yeah.
You had that really vacant look in your eyes.
She didn't have a huge role in this movie,
right,
other than to be, the
eye candy.
The feminine interest. No, she wasn't even eye candy in this movie. She was just a feminine interest for James Hunt. I mean.
Okay.
But both of them, I think, channeled the real people a lot. I mean, there's a lot of, go on YouTube, type in James Hunt and Niki Lauda, and you'll find, half a dozen documentaries that pop up to the top. There's a great one made by a BBC program called Horizon. It's an hour long, and it's totally worth your while watching if you're interested. But yeah, they not only captured the physicality of the people, I think they really captured the the personality of the people. And part of it, I think, is because there was a lot of reference material, but also I think the director's vision. You know, Ron Howard is a terrific director. He knows what he wants. And I think, you know, he really worked those guys to get their performances right on. And they're really spot on. You know, they're not bad impressions. They embody the people that they were playing.
And final question, recreation of the time period.
I can't find a fault with it. You know, the accents, the period costumes, the, you know, the surroundings, everything seemed to me, I couldn't find anything obviously anachronistic.
Yeah, it felt right. It felt like this was a kind of a mid-70s time period. So, yeah, no, almost unremarkable in that it's just that you never felt like it was anything other than the time period that it was being depicted.
Okay, so sum up and score. Joe?
Really good fun. I think this movie is a very easy recommendation to anyone that wants to see a story about a rivalry. And, you know, most movies have, you know, a hero and a villain. This movie switches back and forth all the way through it in terms of who was which. But, yeah, just a really nice Hollywood portrayal. I think reasonably accurate version of what happened in 1976 in Formula One. Go see it. And yeah, if you're not a race car nut, don't let that worry you, because this movie simply doesn't have enough racing in it. It's more about the people. So 8 out of 10.
Cool. Yes, D.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not until the movie is over that you realize how the script has avoided one minefield after another, you know, in the portrayal of these two primary characters. I mean, they're completely steered away from caricatures or oversimplifications, and they become fully formed individuals that you grow to care about. And I hate to say this about a movie about, you know, Formula One racing that I know nothing about, but there was one scene in the movie which almost had me in tears. And it was about, okay, it's a spoiler, but it really moved me. So considering what it accomplishes by just being so good, both in terms of an amazing script as well as the craft of the movie, I too give it an 8 out of 10.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I would recommend it again to anyone.
I give it 7 bananas.
Oh, good.
And yeah, I would absolutely come see it with you again. It's the kind of movie that is just so, it's so well crafted, and it's so much about the personalities that even when you know what's happening, which I did, I knew exactly every beat of this movie. I knew what was going to happen because, again, it's based on historical fact. It didn't take away from it at all. Really, really good. All right, move on to movie number 3, which is Prisoners. And I think, Yazdi, you're going to tell us about Prisoners.
Yes. Denis Villeneuve, the Montreal-based director of Incendies, which was nominated for Best Foreign Film Oscar in 2011, makes his first foray into Hollywood with the gritty murder mystery slash action thriller Prisoners. This film tells the story of two young girls from neighboring homes who go missing. When the police investigation led by Detective Loki, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, is unable to find any leads, it causes escalating tension for the parents of the two little girls. The parents are played in the movie by Hugh Jackman and Maria Bello, as well as Terrence Howard and Viola Davis. Driven to despair, Hugh Jackman character decides to take matters in his own hands by going after the seemingly obvious abductor of the girls, and so unravels a story that goes to some very dark places. Aaron Guzikowski wrote the script for the film, which also co-stars Paul Dano. The director of this movie quit his career in science to pursue filmmaking, according to his IMDb website. Was he smart to have done so? What do you guys think?
So for me, this is more horror story than psychological thriller. The tight camera angles and the few gotcha moments were really good. Overall, I really liked this movie and was suitably entertained. And since seeing it, I can't stop thinking about it.
I absolutely loved Act 1 and 2. Of this movie. I think they were tense, darkly frightening. I felt in many ways like I was experiencing Silence of the Lambs again for the very first time.
You stole my words.
So yeah, but it got a little odd towards the end of the movie as revelation after revelation kind of came about, and I really wished it ended up feeling too long, which is such a horrible way to describe a movie that up until that point had me absolutely riveted. So I was a little disappointed by the way that things turned out, but nonetheless, a very enjoyable movie experience.
So this movie kind of gave me a sort of queasy anxiety, you know, through virtually all of its running time. You know, this feeling of dread sitting at the bottom of your chest, where you do not want to see what is unfolding on the screen, but yet you can't pull your eyes away from it. And I mean, this queasy feeling felt familiar. And the reason why it felt familiar is because I tried to remember when was the last time I felt that. And it was when I saw Silence of the Lambs. And I think this movie can really stand comfortably beside Silence of the Lambs in terms of its accomplishment. It is a long movie. I think it clocks in at 2.5 hours. But for me, it went by really quickly. And we can talk more about this. But on the face of it, it's just a really very sturdy, you know, murder mystery slash thriller. But what really elevated the movie for me was all these moral questions that it asks along the way.
Yes.
You know, that really elevated it makes this movie so much more than just an action movie.
Absolutely. Yassi, I 100% agree with you. I mean, I like the story. This is cat and mouse on multiple levels, and it's smart and clever in the way it does it. And I like the twists and turns, and I like those ethical questions that it tries to explore. And for me, it comes down to what are the lengths you would go to in order to protect the things that are most precious to you? And those are the things that are answered again and again. And I couldn't figure out which was morally right and morally wrong. So for that reason, and then I think just incredible acting by Jake Gyllenhaal. He does it again.
Well,
I just love that the subtle nuances about that character, the tics, the tattoos, the way he looks.
Blinking about?
Yeah, he basically,
he's
I read...
some obsessive compulsive, he's, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I watched this, probably one of the best Inside the Actors Studios. Yes, he's doing a tic.
Yeah, go on.
I watched one of the best Inside the Actor Studio with Jake Gyllenhaal recently, and he basically was saying that he took a lot of time to try and develop who this person was, and I think he hit the nail on the head.
Yeah. I mean, I think he just crossed the line in terms of overplaying it here for me, but I mean, it's hard to knock an actor as talented as Gyllenhaal. I mean, he was in one of my favorite films of last year, End of Watch, and this is a completely different portrayal of a law enforcement officer. There's no commonality between the two characters, and it just shows me how versatile a character he was. But yeah, and everyone else as well, Hugh Jackman. I love the moral questions. I think the difficulty I had with the movie was everything that was technically incorrect or illegal about the way the lead character was behaving, I completely understood and sympathized with, and I would have done exactly the same things. I didn't think anything that he was doing was wrong, even though clearly he was overstepping the mark.
Really?
Mm.
He did overstep the mark many times.
Me too.
And I think that's the value of this movie, is that it will really divide audiences. And you know, I'm probably, you know, one of the world's biggest fans of Jake Gyllenhaal. So I won't contradict anything you both said, but I think it's unfair to just single him out because, you know, I think everybody here is so good.
Amazing.
You know? Maria Bello is so good, and Terrence Howard, and Viola Davis in a small role. But Hugh Jackman, who, you know, I will never ever be a fan of Hugh Jackman as long as I live. But even, I think actually Hugh Jackman has the most difficult role in the movie, to give credit where it's due.
Absolutely.
And, you know, he pulls it off. You know, he really pulls it off.
And it's a different type of Hugh Jackman than we've seen before. I mean, we've seen the, you know, the singing hero in Les Mis, and this wasn't a million miles from that character in some ways, but it was just done much, much better, I think.
Yeah, and again, you know, not to repeat myself, but I think the movie's greatest strength is, you know, as a provocation on these morally muddled issues, like, you know, trusting the law versus seeking vigilante justice, you know, about the fallibility in placing doubt on somebody who appears, you know, very conveniently as a person who you can blame for a horrible crime, you know, condoning the worst of actions, you know, when you are overwhelmed with grief and despair. I mean, all of these are not, you know, things which movies normally venture into, and the movie, and this one does a great job with it. And that's the reason why I think the script of this movie is being, you know, talked about, you know, for awards consideration.
I just didn't know where it was going to go. Yeah. I just kept getting really surprised.
Yeah, totally.
So surprised.
But did anyone else feel that it got a little muddled towards the end? Because, I mean, I really felt like, especially when we got the kind of the Scooby-Doo monologue, which I always criticize. I hate in movies when, you know, the bad guy, the person responsible for all of the happenings in the movie, you know, comes along with these confessional speeches and, you know, I did it because of this, that, and the other. You know, it's like, I was like, as soon as we got to that point, I was putting my head in my hand saying, why did we have to take this route?
I liked it. I liked the ending. I actually thought it was very smart.
It was smart, but it felt a little unbelievable to me.
I see what you mean. Okay.
And then I think the fact that, well, it would have been, play that situation out in reality. And I know it's the movies, it's not reality, but play that situation out in reality. It would have been a much swifter set of actions that the villain would have taken at the point at which the villain was discovered. So that's all I'm going to say. I don't want to spoil it. But it just was like, oh, really? You're really going to go there? So at that point, I felt disappointed because the rest of it was all crafted so well. So well.
I mean, I now realize you're talking about the last scene and not the last shot. I think the last shot of the movie is near perfect. I love how the movie ends. And, you know, some people have come up to me afterwards and said, you know, oh, it was kind of ambiguous. And, you know,
it
was very clear to me what happened. But I love how it ends at just the perfect point. And I also love how the movie begins. I don't know if you remember, but the first shot of the movie is about Hugh Jackman taking his son to shoot
a deer
in the woods. And again, it plays so beautifully.
Almost a bit Hannah-esque, I thought.
Hannah-esque, but it plays so beautifully with the moral issues which are going to come up later, because he justifies killing this animal as a sport. And then when he has to face, you know, death and all these issues, it just plays so well against it.
Okay. Sum up, Joe.
Tense and darkly frightening. This movie, I think, exposed many of the dark sides of humanity. And for that, I really admired it. As I've already said, it went a little off track towards the end, but not enough to spoil the experience. For fear of being horribly boring, I'm going to give this one an 8 out of 10 again. So it's 8 and 8 and 8 for all three movies this week. But very, very good stuff. And an 8's a little bit of a stingy 8.
Yes, Dee.
Yeah, so set aside all the morally tenuous issues, you know, set the acting aside and set the craft of how well the movie's been constructed. And what remains is still a very sturdy thriller with a story that always stayed ahead of me. I think this film betters the genre it belongs to, and it should be a source of pride for everybody involved with making it. I have a feeling this movie may become a classic in this genre. I give it an 8 out of 10, again recognizing that that might be too little.
This, for me, is the ultimate bogeyman story that will have you on the edge of your seat. Enough gore and gruesomeness with just enough drama not to make it melodramatic, and a very relevant title. I love the title of this movie. I'm actually going to give this one an 8 as well. I want to give it a 9, but I can't. But a really solid 8.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing which I would have against this movie is it might be too dark for some people. Because, yeah. I mean, parts of it get really violent, parts of it get really dark.
Yeah.
And I think if you're the parent of a young kid, it might be hard to watch.
Yeah.
You know, a little girl being abducted. I think that in itself is very, very unsettling.
It was incredibly heavy. Yeah. This isn't a movie that is a happy film in any way.
There's nothing happy about this movie.
And a great use of blackouts in the movie. This movie uses a lot of, you know, people don't do that anymore, where a scene ends and the whole scene goes dark for a few seconds and then the next scene starts. And
it has like a fade-out.
Fade-out. Like, it does that 2 or 3 times in the movie too, very effectively, which I noticed.
Good films.
Yes. Yeah. It's great. I love this time of year. Lots of great movies.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's wrap up our episode for today. mail@movierollers.com, as always. Do let us know what you think of these movies and what you think of our reviews. twitter.com/movierollers, facebook.com/movierollers as well. Until our next episode, as always, it's too many movies, too little time. I'm going to say goodnight.
From you?
Well, of course it was from me. I said it.
Good night.
And good night for me as well.
I tripped you up, didn't I?
You did.